Why might someone not want to be free? Why might someone stay stuck? Why might someone not choose freedom if it's an option? Okay, so take a minute, think. I'll take your best answers. What do you think? Why might someone not want to be free? Yeah. Comfort. Okay, so it's just more comfortable staying where you are. Definitely, that's an option. What else? Fear. Yeah, what's going to happen? You're not sure what's going to happen. Okay, what else? Another reason people might stay stuck. Yeah. Convenience. It's just easier to stay where you are. Sure. Okay, kind of goes along with comfort. What else? There's too many options, right? If you're where you are, you know what you're doing, yeah? If you're free, there's like, what do I do with that? Yeah, what else? It can't be trusted. Ooh, they can't be trusted. Oh, so maybe they think they can't be trusted with the freedom. They're not responsible enough to take freedom. Oh, we got a lot of answers now. All right, what? They don't know what it is. Yeah. So they've never experienced freedom. They don't know what it's like. And so they're not sure if they want it. What else, Robin? It's not so bad here. Oh, it's not so bad. So being not free, it feels okay. I'm okay with it. Okay. All right. Awesome. We have one more? Yeah. Ah, yeah. If you don't have the choice, then it's not your fault, right? Okay, you don't have to take the response, but the great, great responses, yeah? So here's something I think is generally true for most people in this day and age. I think it's generally true that any problem we have can be solved. Any improvement we want to make in our life, it can get better if we're willing to actually go through kind of the pain, the discomfort, the sacrifice that it's going to take to make that change. Do you think that's true? Is that true for you? Like, your life could improve in the way you want it to improve if you are willing to do what it took to get there. Is that true? Okay. It's an inconvenient truth, right? And there are exceptions. There are extreme cases, right, where it might not be true. But I think generally for most of us, progress is possible if we are willing to pay the price, yeah? So I think of like even addictions, yeah? Whether it's drugs or alcohol or ice cream or pornography or, you know, gambling or screen time. Freedom is possible, yeah? If you're willing to go through the pain of withdrawal or the pain of facing whatever it is that drove you to that addiction in the first place, yeah? Freedom is possible. We have a loneliness epidemic in America, right? But it is possible to make friends. It is possible to go out and find groups to join and get in relationships if you're willing to go through the pain of possible rejection, of actually meeting people and getting into messy situations where you're having to deal with real people, right? Loneliness can be solved, but it could be painful. We also have an obesity epidemic, right? We could all get in better shape. It's not a mystery. We know what it takes, diet, exercise, but it's uncomfortable, yeah? I mean, Jesus showed us that death itself is not a sticking point, right? Death itself can be overcome if we're willing to do the hard work of actually trusting God, walking with Jesus. Even death doesn't have to get us stuck. But doesn't always look the way we want it to look. Yeah, like I could diet and exercise every day for the rest of my life and my body would never look like Sonia's body. Okay? Like it just wouldn't happen. That happens naturally, right? Okay? So our expectations have to be tempered a little bit, right? But generally life can be better in the way we desire. Progress is possible. Yeah? But often the cost of that is just not what we want to pay. Yeah, so we get in these cycles of, I wish, but I could never. Yeah, like, I wish I could lose some weight, but I could never actually count my calories every day. I could never actually go to the gym every day. I wish I could get out of debt, but I could never actually move in with other people to save money on rent. I could never actually live without a car, you know. I wish my relationship with my spouse was better, but I could never actually set aside time every day just to be with them, right? Like, we get in these cycles of like, what is it actually going to cost to do this thing that I want to do? And a lot of times we stay stuck because, you know, like we said, it's just easier than getting free. Last time I was here, last time I spoke, I kind of mentioned briefly that one of the things God was talking to me about was the fact that I was spending way too much time on my phone. Okay, just YouTube, scrolling, wasting my life. And so as part of a New Year's resolution, what I did was I went down to T-Mobile, I changed my plan so that I have no data on my phone. I already have no Wi-Fi at my house. I have no TV at my house, so I was using my phone as a hotspot with my laptop whenever I need to do work at home. But I went in and I took data off my phone plan. So then, whenever I left the school where I teach at, I was disconnected. I was out. Okay? And it was crazy. Like, I felt it leaving school every day. Like, it was disorienting. Like, there was all this information in the air that I didn't have access to, and it was weird. Okay? And it was really good for me. It was really good for me. I slept better. I was generally, you know, although disoriented, in a better mood, right? I had to process my day and my thoughts with God. But I also wasn't getting all my text messages. So especially like group texts, my small group text thread, I wasn't getting my messages from my friends. So you guys, I lasted 2 weeks. 2 weeks. I lasted 2 weeks. And then, I know, right? Yeah. So because I was a responsible small group leader and wanted to be a good friend, I put data back on my phone. And of course, the problems started right back up. Like, in those 2 weeks, I had not learned any self-discipline to keep myself off of the YouTube, off the apps. And the honest truth is, right, is that I'm not actually that important. I don't need to be gotten a hold of in that way, yeah? I could be that person who only does things face-to-face, who's only available through email from the hours of like 6 a.m. to 4 p.m., and then you have to find me, okay? I could be that person, but that was a cost I wasn't willing to pay. That was a pain I wasn't willing to go through. And so I've tried a bunch of other things. I'm still trying. Like, my latest thing is I actually put a child lock on my phone, and I had Hannah type in the password and not tell me what it is, so now she's my adult supervisor of my phone use. And it's working so far. It's a good way, I'm getting there. One of the things I kind of found through this was diagnosing helps a little bit, just trying to figure out where does it actually hurt, right? Where is it hurting to get freedom from these things? So I think there's four main ways that we can hurt, that it comes down to four categories that the pain stops us from seeking freedom. So it's either physical, emotional, social, or spiritual pain is going to stop us. Yeah, so physical pain, we're all very familiar with, you know, a good workout, and we're sore, are we hungry, right? Just physically tired, the kind of physical things in our bodies that stop us from pursuing what we know is good. Emotional pain, we're pretty familiar with those negative feelings we don't want to feel, whether it's anger or sadness, disappointment, guilt, shame, the things we run from so we don't have to feel them. Social pain, which I think is managing other people's feelings towards us. Right? What are they feeling about me? What is their opinion about me and what I'm doing? Am I pleasing them? Am I making them feel angry or upset? Am I disappointing them? And then spiritual pain, which I think is a bit more complex. I actually had to reach out to a few friends to help articulate how is spiritual pain different. And I think what we came up with is it just feels like distance from God. When you want God to be right with you in it, whatever you're doing, and he just doesn't feel present, there's a spiritual pain there that is really difficult. And especially for those of us who are trying so hard to bring the kingdom, trying to so hard to follow Jesus and want God to be in it with us, when we don't feel that, like I think of Jesus on the cross saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? I think of Mother Teresa going through the dark night of the soul, right? Just serving with all her heart and not feeling like God's presence was with her. Like that is a spiritual pain that can stop us from seeking after good things, because what if, right? What if we don't feel God with us in it? So a lot of times, you know, it's a combination of some of those four things that will stop us. So I talked about addiction. Addiction starts maybe with physical pain, especially if it's a chemical addiction. We have to like reset our body's chemistry, and that is physically painful. But then we have to walk through the emotional pain of actually addressing what it was that drove us to that addiction in the first place. And then maybe we have to deal with the social pain of, are people still going to accept me if I'm not doing that thing with them anymore? If they know that I've had to walk through this, what are they going to think of me, right? I think of like raising kids or doing really, really deep, loving ministry as painful in all four ways, you know, potentially painful in all four ways. And the things that grow us, the things that really make us better, make our lives more rich, cost. They are uncomfortable and painful, yeah? So we've been in a sermon series. Jordan has started this sermon series of what it takes to live as free people. And it started kind of, was born out of a sermon series he did in the Exodus last year, where we looked at how God took the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt, and this idea that it's actually fairly easy to take people out of slavery, but then it's really hard to take the slavery out of the people. To actually live as a free person is really difficult, yeah? And so I'm going to start with a short excerpt from Exodus, just to remind us kind of where we were, what lessons we learned from the Exodus. And then we're going to turn to the New Testament and see what it means when Jesus comes on the scene for freeing us. Okay, so in this first one is just a couple of lines that we're going to pull out of Exodus. And this is when the Israelites were still in slavery. They were still in Egypt. But Moses has showed up on the scene. Moses has started doing some miracles and has said, hey, Israelite leaders, God has told me it's time. We're going to get free. Finally, people have been crying out for freedom for generations now. And Moses does a few miracles and it pisses off Pharaoh. Okay? Pharaoh is not happy with the Israelites asking for some worship time in the desert. Not about it. And so the Israelite leaders go and meet with Pharaoh. And we're picking it up here. Now, this is Pharaoh talking to the Israelite leaders, and Pharaoh is not happy. Yeah. So Pharaoh says, now get to work. You'll not be given any straw, but you have to produce your full quota of bricks. So the Israelite overseers realized they were in trouble. They were told, you're not to reduce the number of bricks required of you each day. Okay, they're realizing, oh, this is a problem. So they left Pharaoh, and they found Moses and Aaron, who were waiting for them. And they said, the Israelite leaders said to Moses and Aaron, may the Lord look on you and judge you. You have made us obnoxious to Pharaoh and his officials and have put a sword in their hand to kill us. Right? So now that it's gotten hard, now that Pharaoh has gotten angry and made their lives worse, they are rethinking whether or not it's actually worth it to be free. Yeah, because it's kind of one of those cases of the medicine being worse than the condition. Like the cost of actually getting free seems worse than just staying in slavery. Yeah. It is, you know, there's a lot of things going on for the Israelites, reasons why they might not take this. Some of the things that you guys said at the beginning, right? Number one, they've never experienced freedom before. They don't know how good it could be. They don't know what it's like. They don't know if it's going to be worth what they're going through to get it. Yeah. I grew up in the 90s. I have lived life without a cell phone. I know the goodness of the boredom of a summer day with no screens. Like, I know that, and I know how to return to it. But there are plenty of people now living who have no memory of a life without a screen, without a device. How do we explain to them how good it is to be bored, right? It's a bit rough. The other thing is the Israelites here, they're not really able to trust God because they haven't heard from God themselves in this. They're trusting Moses. Moses had shown them some interesting miracles that told them, like, yeah, God is in this with us, you know. But they're trusting Moses, and the miracles that Moses has provided haven't really made things any better for them yet. Right? Like, he did this weird trick where he put his hand in his cloak and he took it out and it was like all full of boils and like leprous, and then he put it back and it was clean again, and it's like, okay, that's interesting. Right? That's very okay, God is with us. But how is that improving our lives? Right? How is that making things better? And so they got mad at Moses. They didn't get mad at the Pharaoh. He didn't get mad at the overseers that were actually oppressing them. They got mad at Moses, who was trying to free them. Because so many times we expect the oppressors, we expect the evil people to be torturous and bad. We expect that of them. But I think so many times the liberators don't prepare us for the hardships of getting free. Right? The people who are freeing us, we often like to talk about how good it's going to be, right? This is what it's going to look like. We don't often talk about the pain that it's going to take to get there. Okay? How hard it's going to be to actually walk through the process to get to the good stuff. And so, you know, the Israelites are rethinking, like, I don't know if it's worth it. This is rough. And complaining is always easier than fighting. Yeah, like that idea of taking responsibility, that idea of like, well, it's somebody else's fault right now. I don't have to worry about it being my fault. I don't have to worry about fighting myself. If I stay in slavery, I can just complain about it. That seems a lot easier. Yeah. And, you know, spoiler alert, the Israelites just kept on complaining the whole way through. They kept on complaining. Yeah. So we're going to take a look at the New Testament. So now Jesus is on the scene, the ultimate liberator of people, the ultimate guy who's going to come and bring freedom. And God is still trying to teach people how to be free. So we're going to look at a passage, again, just a couple of verses from a story from the Gospel of John. And this is Jesus wandering around. He's doing his ministry, he's doing his thing, healing people, delivering people. And he comes to this town called Bethsaida, which has a very famous healing pool. Okay? So a pool where the Israelites would go to kind of get cleansed for temple, and it had these special healing properties associated with it. So picking up from John 5, verse 6, Jesus comes upon this guy who can't get up. And we don't really know what his problem is. We don't know if he's paralyzed, if he's just so sick that he can't really move well. We don't know, but he's been laying there, and he's been laying there a really long time. So when Jesus saw him laying there, and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well? Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick your mat, and walk." Okay. It's an odd story. All right. At Blue Water, we're kind of trained when you're reading the Bible, you know, you stop and you think, what bothers me here? Like what makes me go, And there's a lot of things that are kind of weird about just this very short passage that stand out to me. Yeah. I mean, in the context of first century Israelite culture, the idea of an invalid guy hanging out near a healing pool, that's not too weird. The weird part comes for me when Jesus asks him, "Do you want to get well?" Right? You see a guy laying there, can't move. He's in this town with a healing pool. Like, wouldn't it be obvious? Wouldn't it be obvious? Of course he wants to get well, right? Why wouldn't he want to get well, right? Why is Jesus even asking? Plus, he's Jesus. He already knows, right? But Jesus asks him, "Do you want to get well?" And I think it is provoking him. It is making him think, because Jesus knows that if he heals this guy, he's going to change his entire life situation, right? This guy has been hanging out near these healing pools for like over 30 years. This is the majority of his life. This is what he knows. He can't be hanging out begging for food and getting provided for by the people at the same time that he's just in the right position when the water gets stirred, when things happen, so that he can receive his healing. So he has to choose. Do I beg, or do I go and try to wait and be ready for the healing? And for 38 years, he has been begging. Okay? And he's worked out how to do that, right? This is what he knows. This is what he's comfortable with. If he got well, all of a sudden he'd be in a completely different social context. The community would expect different things of him. People would look at him differently. He would have to work himself instead of begging. He's probably never worked. He doesn't know. He doesn't have a trade. He would have to start maybe in his old age to learn a trade. Like, a lot of things would be really difficult for him if his life got better. Yeah? So many times we do the same thing, right? We build a system around our conditions to make it more comfortable for us instead of actually pursuing change, pursuing improvement, pursuing doing things better. We just make it more comfortable to be where we are. And pursuing change is really disruptive. It could change our whole life, and so we don't do it. The second thing that really kind of strikes me as odd in this passage is the man's response. He doesn't actually address Jesus' question. He doesn't answer Jesus' question. He says, "Oh, well, I don't have anybody to get me in the pool." He doesn't say, "Yes, I want to get well." He doesn't say, "Oh, actually, I'm okay," you know? He says, "I don't have anybody to help me get in the pool," right? You get the feeling that his complaint is very well rehearsed, that this is something he says a lot. This is the reason that he can't have healing. It's not his fault, right? It's other people's fault. He doesn't have to worry about failing because it's other people that are failing him. Yeah. How many times do we do that? You know, you guys said in the beginning, you know, it's easier to complain. It's easier just to put it on other people. Yeah. And he also has these expectations of what healing has to look like. You know, he's heard these stories. He's seen other people go into the pool ill or injured or, you know, not well and come back out healed. And he thinks, okay, that's what has to happen, right? So many times we look at people who have gotten freedom and we think, well, if I can do things the exact same way they do, then it'll work for me too. So many people are selling that, right? Are selling, it's going to be easy because it was easy for me. You do it like me, no problem, okay? You get away from the pain. You don't have to go through all the hard things. It's a big selling point right now, yeah? But it doesn't always work the same way, right? I think it was the famous revivalist, the Rolling Stones, who said, You can't always get what you want, right? You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need. Yeah. Okay. So it works differently for different people. We can't expect to do things the same way that someone else does and get the same results. Yeah. So I'm going to start wrapping things up a little bit early. And we're going to stop with the application point and just kind of provoke you the same way that Jesus provokes people and say, well, do you really want to be free? Right? What progress do you actually want in your life? Imagine something from which you want to be free, some condition you want to change, some life situation that you want to change in your life. Is it worth the trouble? Is it worth the discomfort? Is it worth the cost of whatever it's going to take to get through it, to get to that better place? Right? So kind of count the cost this week. What is it going to take? If you want freedom from money, it might cost you your security. It might cost you your independence. You know, if you're not worried about money at all, you're buying out of the world systems of buying things, then you can't rely on your bank account. You might have to rely on other people. You might have to rely on community. You might have to rely on God. You know, physically you might be less comfortable because you're not able to buy all the things you want to buy if you're not reliant on money. If you want freedom from judgment, it might cost you forgiving people. It might cost you, you know, giving up that right to be offended at people in order to actually be free of other people's judgment. If you want freedom from fear, you might have to be in a lot of unsafe situations. Okay? So God often moves in an opposite spirit. If you want freedom from people's opinions, it might cost you your reputation, right? It might completely destroy your reputation with other people, and you'd have to not care to be free from other people's opinions. So think of something, some way that you want your life to be better, and then think, what is it actually going to take? Do I actually want it enough to do that thing? Right? Either we don't hate the slavery enough to actually get free from it, or we don't love the freedom enough to make the change to get free of it. Right? So where are we stuck? And then our job collectively as a community this week is to remind each other that it is worth it. It is worth it. Right? Every place that we have experienced freedom, we turn around and we tell somebody else, it is good. It is hard, but it is good. It is worth it. Okay? We go around and we tell each other the pain we have been through to get to the place we are, where Jesus is leading us through to get more free, to be closer to Him. And we say, yes, it's worth it. I know it hurts. I know it's hard. I know it's different for you than it is for me, but it's worth it, yeah? So we're going to finish up the same way we started. We're going to do a collective yell of freedom, but this time our yell of freedom is going to take into consideration the people's pain that it's going to take to get the freedom, and it's going to take into consideration the fact that it is worth it to go through that pain, okay? You ready? Here we go. Okay. One, two, three. Freedom! Oh, come on. Yeah. All right. Hey, come on. All right. So I'm going to invite our prayer ministers to come up. If you're on the prayer team, why don't you come on up? And we're going to end service the way we always do. So we need some more prayer ministers to come up. If you're a small group leader, if you went through blah, awesome. Okay, so these folks are here to pray with you, right? If you're looking for some freedom in your life, if you're going through pain in your life to get freedom, have them pray for you. Jesus has a path to healing. Jesus has a path to freedom. He is ready to heal you. Okay, so come up here, get some prayer from these guys. Do any of our prophetic people have any words for anybody? Karen has a painting? Yeah. Anybody else? You're up, Karen. Can somebody hold the painting for her? So Karen's one of our prophetic artists, and she just paints during service the things that the Lord puts on her heart. And sometimes she thinks it's for somebody at the audience, so she's going to tell us what it's about and who it's for here. Here you go. Go for it.
Well, oh, shoot. I saw somebody next to Tiffany. Oh, you're still there. Next to Tiffany on Tiffany's right side. Yeah. So, my sketch. Oh, you could stand up if you don't mind. So, my sketch here is about a red balloon. It's lost. And the story of the red balloon is that there's a lot of pain, and the red balloon just keeps just going. And in this painting, it's supposed to be so high. It's going beyond the mountains. It's above the clouds. But I don't know if this is for you or for you to minister to somebody else, but there's hope, even though the red balloon is floating away. And well, I kind of tried to make a dwelling here, and there's sitting with a Labrador chocolate lab, although it's not, anyways, a little dog. And well, anyways, you just have to use your imagination. Anyways, that's how small it is because the balloon is so far away. And yeah, there's hope for the resolution of it. Yeah, there's hope. And so in Isaiah 30, verse 19, God promises, "In you will weep no more. How gracious he will be when you cry for help. As soon as he hears you, he will answer." So this is a message of hope. Anyways, mm-hmm. I'll be happy to pray with you after.
All right. Thank you. All right. Why don't we all stand as we dismiss? And again, if you want some prayer, please come up. Love to meet any new people. Oh, Father God, we thank you for your freedom. We thank you that you have a path forward, that you have a path to make our lives better, that you have a plan for us, Lord. And we just pray, God, that you would give us the strength, give us the courage to walk that out, to hear from you what that plan is, and to walk with you in it. We pray, Lord, for the encouragement from the brothers and sisters to our sides, that every place that freedom is released, it would be good, Lord, and we would echo that. We pray all these things in Jesus' name.